Welcome, everybody, to Mormons on Mushrooms. Just a reminder that this is a storytelling podcast where we discuss alternative methods for healing from trauma and seeking a more fulfilling life. A lot of times on the podcast, we discuss triggering topics, and we ask that you make your personal mental health top priority. Lastly, the opinions offered by our guests don't necessarily reflect the opinions of the hosts. Sit back, buckle up, and enjoy.
Started to hit record, I was like, oh, wait, I have more things to tell you, Mike, that I can't tell on the recording. That's just, at some point, we got to fucking record this thing.
Did you see that the message that popped up? That's like, actual recording is actually higher, or actual recording quality is actually higher. Is that, it's something like that. It popped up. Basically, it's almost like objects in the mirror are closer than they appear, kind of deal, or like, I don't know, like... Don't worry, Doug, sounds like
I know.
Shit.
It's like they have that as a default. Yeah, they have it as a default thing that's just like, oh, it's not our fault. Believe me, it's fine on our end.
Well, good, because I don't want us to sound like shit, man. You sound great.
Yeah, you sound good too. Well, hey, what's up, Mike? What's new? Happy New Year. Happy New Year, Mike.
Happy New Year. It's been a minute since we recorded, hasn't it? Hasn't it been a minute? When did we record last? It's been...
We recorded the date or the week in between Christmas and New Year's, so it's not been that long.
It hasn't been that long. I felt like it was before Christmas, but we did do that one that we did right after Christmas, right? The one where we just like bitched about Christmas.
I mean, I guess we bitched a little bit, but like we had quite a pleasant, I don't know, both of us had a pretty pleasant time.
Well, I had a lovely time recording that. And, you know, I bitched about it, but, and I guess this is where let's just start out this episode. Let's start out 2024 by releasing some shit from 2023. Can we do that?
Dude, 2023 is in the books for me. Like, 2023 was a fucked up year, man. Like, I've already broken my New Year's resolution, I was going to try to record and see how far into the recording I could make it without using foul language. I've said the F word twice so far, so I'm really rallying up I'm really getting a nice big tally in my swear jar tonight. I'm going to try my darndest.
It's funny because I am so accustomed to curse words that I don't register them anymore. And is that a problem or is it fine? Whatever.
No, but, I don't register them either. But what, Mike, do you know what it comes down to? I don't put a lot of power in words. I like using certain words because of the emphasis and because of the shock value of them sometimes, or just maybe like there are certain curse words that just sound good to me. Do you know what I mean? It's like they perfectly like accentuate my point. But the reason I made a resolution to not curse as much on when we record is because of in case my mom or your mom ever gets a hold of these recordings and listens, I want to like, okay, sorry, mom, you can listen to all of my masturbation stories and you can listen to the stories I tell about exploring, you know, my higher self and exploring spirituality and exploring my relationship with the divine. And I'm going to try my best not to say fuck, you know?
My mom does listen, Doug. And I think that's her biggest complaint is our okay. Potty mouth. I think she's fine with us talking about masturbation and, you know, interviewing people about poly whatsoever, not whatever. But like,
fair enough. So for that reason, I am going to do my darndest to not say swears.
I like it. Okay. For Mama Peggy's sake, we'll not say swears.
Dude, you can't be saying her name.
Oh, I think we're past that point. Can we not say her name? Can we? Who are we projecting?
Okay,
at this
well,
point?
I'll follow your lead here, bro.
It's all fine. It's all fun. Oh, we're protecting her. People
all right,
know.
Sounds good.
Don't people love you. Know? I mean, people know. I mean, we're like the worst kept secret in all of the world, aren't we? Or not? Maybe not. I guess not.
I know. I keep trying to convince myself that like that nobody knows our identity. I keep doing it, man. I can't help myself. You I'm know, doing like my darndest.
When Bruce Wayne goes out on the town and he's like dropping all this money and like wink, wink, and talking about Batman and like, ooh, who could this Bat character be? And everyone's like, dude, there's only one person in this whole town who could possibly, who has the luxury to build a bat wing, like a whole like bat copter and a plane shaped like a bat. Who else could it be, Flyboy? Like, what is going on? You're not fooling anyone,
dude. One of the great things about it varies from era to era and writer to writer. But like, one of the great things about Batman is that kind of pretty. I mean, first of all, things about Batman change based on all of those different circumstances. Two things never change. Batman is forever an orphan. Like Bruce Wayne's parents are never going to not be dead, right? Because that's like the only way there is a Batman is if the Waynes are 6 feet under. So that's the first thing that'll never change. The second thing that'll never change is that Bruce Wayne is like considered peak physical condition. So like he has no superpowers. But like I heard it explained one time, or maybe I read it explained one time in one of the comic books that like Bruce Wayne would come in second place in every Olympic event type of thing. Like that's a good way of looking at it. He's like peak human condition, right? The reason I'm bringing this whole thing up is because if there was a person that was like just running around having dinners in your town who was like peak human condition and could like get the silver medal in both the hammer throw, the shot put, and the 100-meter dash, you'd be like, I know who that is. Okay, of course I know who that is. Look how athletic he is. Look how huge he is. I get the whole, the Superman thing. It's like the joke is that like all he does is put on a pair of glasses and everybody's like, man, who's Superman? Who is it? Who's his identity, right?
Yeah.
But the Batman one is just as silly. Like, there's literally a man who can jump from rooftop to rooftop and fly around and fight bad guys. Of course, it's this billionaire who's in peak physical condition. Yeah.
What is it, that line from the first one? Where does he get all those wonderful toys or whatever? Well, yeah.
Where check does out the he Elon. Those wonderful toys.
Check out the Elon Musk in your town who has funny money, who can afford all this shit. But if only if Elon Musk like was ripped and like in good physical shape. That's like
I know, dude. Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg had that thing for a while where they were going to do like a fight. They were going to do like a MMA fight, you know.
Oh, were they really? That's cool. I didn't know this.
Oh, do you not, Mike? Do you not know about this?
No, this is news to me.
This is fairly recent. Like Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg were going to do a billionaire battle royale, like MMA fight, because I guess they both do MMA training or something like that. But here's the thing: if either one of those idiots was Batman, we would be like, wow, look how freaking shredded he is. Like he's wow. Look at the video. Look at the TikTok video of Mark Zuckerberg training with his trainer. He's got a 12 pack and he's got like these huge shoulders and biceps and muscles. We'd be like, wow, Mark Zuckerberg. I'll bet he could be back. We'd be speculating that he was Batman no matter what.
Yeah, right. And then all of a sudden Batman comes out with this like space plane and it's just taken to the SpaceX logo and put a sticker on it. And it's like this.
Where, little, man, where does the guy get, where does he get those wonderful toys? Like, where on earth are they manufacturing these things? I don't know, man. Check the receipts. Like, who signed for this shit? Like, and at least in the Christopher Nolan one, there's that one throwaway line when they're like designing the suit and doing tests and stuff like that, where they're like, okay, you know, Michael Caine's Alfred character is like, all right, we're going to order, you know, such and such from China. And then we're going to order these other pieces of your suit from, you know, South America. And then there's like a Canadian shipping company that has, so at least they're like making it plausible that, oh, they're just flying under the radar and all this shit's coming through on Wayne Enterprises. But like, in reality, if this guy was like, if he's like the dad in A Christmas Story and he's like opening up this huge box that's got like, oh, my new bat suit has arrived. I can't wait to see it. He's like opening it up. Like the delivery driver would be like, I think that billionaire is Batman.
It's like, guys, can you not like tie the dots here, connect the dots? By the way, as we've been having this conversation, you just put on the coolest fucking glasses I've ever seen. And now well, I don't even well, know.
The only reason is. I put, they're my Clark Kent glasses. Look, now you don't know. Look.
Sorry, I'm like, who am I talking
who
to
am
now? I don't know. You've got a grandma sweater and, but cool glasses. I just don't know. Like, yeah. But the reason why I bring all that up.
The grandma's.
I just don't know if we're fooling anyone anymore. I don't know if we're fooling anyone after 3.5 years of this. If we're still fooling anyone, they're like, ooh, who's Mike? Who are Mike and Doug from?
I know, man. And you know, it's funny, like every once in a while, it'll get back to me. Like somebody will be like, hey, psst, I stumbled upon this podcast recently. And I'm like, oh, tell me more. They're like, well, you know, it's such and such. And it's called Mormons on Mushrooms. And I heard a pretty familiar voice. And to this day, I still say to people, oh, wow, I'll have to check it out. Because they're still trying to like get me to admit something. And I'm like, not on your life.
I love it, man. Anyway, so let's just talk about, let me do a little like, there's a few things around 2023 that I just want to put a bow on here for a minute.
Okay.
And unless I'm going to take us down a dark turn, but I don't think I have to. We can just. You know what? Let me just talk about a couple things. One,
if it goes dark, it goes dark. Who cares?
A year ago yesterday was the anniversary of my cousin taking his life. And we've talked about that last year. So yeah, I'm taking us in a hard right direction from Batman and Bruce Wayne. But I guess if it's just been, obviously, you know, the year anniversary, I think, it's been on my chest today and yesterday. And you know, it's one of those things with death. It's like, it feels like it happened 3 weeks ago and that it happened a lifetime ago, you know, simultaneously. Yeah. And it's just caused me to reflect on this year and how excited I am for 2024. Cause 2023 was shit.
Yeah. 23 was a rough, rough year.
Yeah, so I mean, it started out with that, and then I don't know. It's you know, all in 2023, we talked about it on the podcast about death and about rebirth. We've talked about that Inuit tale of Lady Death and how embracing mm-hmm. Lady Death and embracing the ups and downs and the change in the cycles of human life or life in general. And it's just so much easier said than done. You know, we can just say, oh yeah, rebirth is coming, or like, it's, I guess some of the stuff that's come up for me when, as I reflect on that this year, and especially a year since he died, is like, I guess it goes back to one of our first episodes that has the title, There's No Timeline to Grief. And I guess there's no fucking timeline to it. You know, it's like you think you're in a pretty good spot and then bam, you kind of get hit with it again and another wave comes. And, you know, I don't want to talk about grief constantly on this podcast forever and ever, but I guess it's been on my mind as I kind of reflect back on 2023 and into 2024. And, you know, it's, I'm bringing it up because I feel the pressure right now of society to, okay, set New Year's resolutions. What do you want to do? Like, go to the gym. Like, it's a new year, new start, but we're still in the middle of fucking winter. You know, I'm almost feeling like I want my new year to start of Aries season. Like, I'm going to go to the Zodiac like calendar here because I feel like I'm still in winter and I know resolutions and whatever, but like, I just can't will myself right now to be out of winter yet. And I live in California where it's not that, by the way, it's actually been 40 something degrees lately. And so it's been pretty cold, but like, but yeah, I guess I'm not done with winter yet. And so I guess I was reminded of that yesterday. And over the holidays, it was a hard holiday season. So, you know, one other thing. So that the year began with that. And then, as you know, and if people have listened to the podcast lately,
let's maybe we can sort of pick apart one thing at a time here a little bit, because I think this might correspond to the next thing. I can feel the next thing you're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. So let's address your cousin's death. You know, a lot has, you know, leading up to, and then in the real, like just after it happened, sort of aftermath, you really went through quite a lot. And then just now, as we were talking, you made that comment that, you don't want to constantly talk about grief on this podcast, but I don't know, man. There are very few things that are as like, that are a life that are part of life, like that are a constant, like grief. Mm. Right. I mean, we are in a constant state of decay, and we're in a constant state of change, and change is those little deaths. I mean, change is the thing that ushers in new life, new modalities, new paradigms, just whatever. But with change, that's, you know, people will say cliche things like, oh yeah, you know, people hate change. Well, no, people don't hate change. People hate death. People hate the staring down the barrel of having to grieve yet another thing. I think most of us feel that way about grief. Like, I don't know that there, I mean, maybe there are, right? And just like there are people who love, you know, pain, like there's masochists, there's sadists. I mean, there's probably people who do sort of get some kind of like weird satisfaction out of, you know, the grieving process, but that's not to dismiss it. It is tough. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you mentioned our first, you mentioned a podcast that came out 3 years ago called No Timeline for Grief. Well, it's just as true now as it was then. It's not like we've reached some new level of enlightenment. I mean, grief comes and goes, right? It's hills and valleys. There are moments when you feel like, oh, I can handle it. I'm in a good spot, and then it can come rushing back, right? So I think that for me, I don't think that we can continue to have this podcast unless we are consistently talking about grief, because grief is, I mean, this, our podcast is not some earth shattering, like, you know, hey, here are the protocols for life. Here's like, our podcast is about living life. That's what it's about. And finding new ways to do that, finding new perspective, finding friends, finding the people who can walk us home. But I think the day we stop talking about grief is the day we probably don't have this podcast anymore.
I'm glad you said that, because, in fact, like one of the paper I'm writing right now for school, you know, I'm talking about Lehi's dream in the paper, actually. You know how I did like that analysis of Lehi's dream? Well, I'm doing it in paper format now.
By the way, such a good episode. Go, whatever you're doing, go find that episode of Gonzo's podcast where Mike's talking about Lehi's
What's
dream.
It called? Oh, Book of Mormon cast, BOM cast, where I, while I'm on Bomb acid, cast. Break apart.
Sorry, I should have said that from the beginning. Bomb I didn't mean to. Yeah. No shade, Gonzo. You're bomb cast.
We'll put the link in the show notes, but it's all the my thrust of the paper, the gist that I'm trying to get at is that, like, the divine, those experiences where you're in connection with your true self, those are found in the mists of darkness. It's not found while you're gripping on the iron rod, trying to walk a collective path of someone else's collective path, right? Sometimes you have a good experience gripping an iron rod, but like,
yeah,
but you know, it's found.
That's why I'm grinning.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's, but in those mists and in, I guess in grief too, and in those dark places, and, you know, especially in a society that does not allow grief, really, like, we don't allow grief in our society, or we don't allow it for long periods of time, or don't allow it for, you know, I think we talked about it in another episode about, like, someone saying to a close friend of mine, like, you should be over the death by now. You should be over it. A therapist saying that to someone. And I think we have that collective attitude in our society that you should be over it. And so maybe that's some remnants of me right now talking about like this, like, oh, maybe I should be over it. Or maybe we can get back to some stuff. But I guess I'm not ready to put a bow yet on 2023. I'm acting like 2024, I'm not going to experience grief or loss as well. I mean, who knows? 2024 could be more grief and loss. It could be, who knows? It could be both. It could be all of it. And I think sitting in that for a bit is not the worst thing, but it's not the easiest thing.
It's hard though. Like I like talking about this kind of stuff because, I don't know. Sometimes it feels like the things that we talk about I don't know, but it could feel like we've achieved some sort of like understanding. We've gotten to a new level of like, okay, I did the grief and here, and I'm coming here to tell you what I learned. Oh man. I'm going through a pretty significant loss right now. You and I were just talking about it before we hit record. It's a couple months old and it's devastating, you know? God, I'm getting emotional just talking about it. Like it's a different kind of loss, you know, than what you're talking about with your cousin. But it's not this thing of like, ooh, goody, yay. I can't wait for my next experience with grief or pain or loss or hurt so that I can like dominate grief, so that I can solve grief. I think that the reason we talk about this stuff just together, because at worst, you and I, honestly, we've talked about this before. This podcast could have zero listeners, and still you and I would do it because it's just nice to have someone to talk to about this stuff, you know? You and I have a shared therapist / coach. We do our thing. There are a lot of other people in my life that I can talk to about certain things, but like there's something very safe and what's the word I'm looking for here? I guess just cozy about having someone I can come to and just be like, man, shit's hard. So the reason I'm bringing this up, Mike, is because I think that sometimes our conversations that we send out into the world can maybe sound like we have unlocked new levels or that we've figured something out. I don't think that that's the case. I think it's the case that we've found a person that we can talk to about some of this stuff. And that's something that you don't want to take lightly. And it's not, and it's something that you want other people to maybe have a little sliver, like a little slice of, so that they can feel a little bit less alone or in it, you know?
I mean, it's becoming more clear to me. Just
sorry, I got a little emotional there at the end.
I want to point out a couple of things you said that really struck me. One is that more and more I'm realizing how much in every facet of life, it's just the blind leading the blind. We all woke up here one day, yeah. Right? We all woke up here one day, like bare asses, like just in the breeze, like in the cold air, wondering why the fuck we're here. And some people have a little bit more experience or a little bit more, but no one knows. No one knows. We're all blind leading each other. And I think the mists of darkness are good for that kind of image. Like we're all just like fumbling around in the dark. And, you know, every once in a while, someone gets a glimmer of something. I go, hey, come taste this fruit. And we taste it. And then sometimes they set up a cult around it and say, this is the fruit. And you're like, well, nah, bullshit, man. That's not the fruit. Maybe it's your fruit, but it's not my fruit. And we fumble around some more. And I think, you know, sometimes our paths cross for moments, you know, and sometimes they cross for longer periods of time. But eventually we're all walking our own individual path here. And so at some point, sometimes our paths have to like weave and interweave and pull apart. And, you know, you talk about the death that you're going through in the last, you know, I think we said 8 weeks or so. I'm glad you brought that up because there are other types of deaths other than physical deaths, other than literal deaths that require almost different types of grief, but it's like, you can't, the griefs can be just as intense because it's a death. And we don't honor those in our society or hold space for them.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned it. You mentioned how, especially in our Western Judeo-Christian sort of like vibe, we don't really allow for the grieving process, you know? And that's with real actual death that we don't allow that. With like changes in relationships, breakups, divorce, you know, friendships that fade, that kind of thing. There's just not there's not only is there not an acceptance of it, there's not even an acknowledgement that is something that needs to be grieved, that needs to go through the grieving process. And it's maybe even in some ways, maybe even more painful, in some ways. I'm not saying that, you know, a change in a relationship dynamic is worse than death. I'm just saying that in some ways, that person still living and breathing and interacting with people out there can be more painful.
It can be a different type of heart, man. A different type of heart. And yeah. I don't know if we have to even rate it. And so, I mean, with that said,
I'm trying to create a higher.
but I'm glad you put it out because I just, you know. So with that said, I mean, there's like, if people have listened to the podcast lately, they've probably already like read between the lines of what I'm going through. But, you know, my wife and I, we've been together 21 years in December, but we separated back in May and halfway through the year, we separated. And it's been the hardest thing I've ever done. You know, I just talked about the death of my cousin who was really like a brother to me, and that was awful. And I'm not trying to rate the two in that way. But as far as the amount of grief, I'm realizing how much the grief is similar and different at the same time, right? Like, but having gone through the grieving or going through, but really the depths of like what I was going through with my cousin and his death, you know, I realized after my wife and I separated that I was going through, I was going through all the cycles again. It was the anger and regret and pain and loss, and then good memories, and you'd have a laugh at a good memory, and then you'd cry, and then you'd cycle through like this spiral of grief and pain, and where it's different though, and where it's really hard. And I've never acknowledged this because I haven't gone through it. And so like when I feel bad for my friends, like who have gone through it, and I haven't really known, right? Like I remember one time, so I was right in the middle of writing my master's exams, which it's high pressure. You know, you get one shot at it to pass at the master's level and then the PhD level to see if you're going to go on. And it's a matter that like most likely you'll go on, but you still have to write the papers. They still have to be written, and they still have to be written well enough to pass. And we were in the thick of it, and my wife and I, and I didn't sleep for two nights in a row. Maybe I got like 1 hour in there, and my papers were due in a week, and I had not made good progress on them. Writing papers without sleep, it's like my brain couldn't comprehend words. Like I was like spinning. And I remember thinking, I remember telling you this. I was like, look, it feels just like a death. She's not there. We're not romantically, the love and the romance that we had is no longer. And that's been an anchor in my life for 20 years. So this anchor for half of my life is no longer there in the way that it was. If she had literally died, my job would have been like, take the time you need. Just like, you know, I could have talked to the school and been like, look, my spouse just died. My school would have been like, look, take a leave of absence, do whatever you need. Like, we're here for you. I told my boss at work, and she was great about it. You know, she's great. She's like, tell me what you need, kind of deal. But in that state, I couldn't say I need to take bereavement leave. That wasn't an option. It's not in the policy of the company I work for to take bereavement for this. It's more just like, look, we can be flexible, but like you got to come in and do your job. You know, you got to still wake up. The world still goes on. And look, with a literal death, it still goes on too. There's at least some window of acceptance. And now, like I said, I don't want to get into this thing where it's like, I'm just acknowledging the differences and some of the ways in which this type of death can even be harder, but in no way would I wish the opposite. I'm just saying that like, it was hard because I was still expected to wake up, to be with the kids, to write my papers, to make money, to go to work. And I'm like, I can't function. I'm a fucking mess. And it wouldn't be great if we had, yeah. Go.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. Sorry.
I was going to say just one more thing. It's just like, wouldn't it be great if as a society, we allowed space for transitions like this. If we didn't expect people, I mean, I feel like maybe it's probably like, you know, even talking about a literal death, there is a rallying around and like, okay, let's come together for the funeral. Let's come support the family. But then in probably like the day in the weeks after the funeral must feel like the loneliness because everyone else gets on with their lives and you're stuck. You have like this tremendous outpouring of love and support. And then everyone wants you to get over it because you're a reminder of the fragility of human life and their situation and that their lives can turn on a dime in an instant. And you're a living reminder of that. And they're all getting back to their jobs and their work. Life goes on. And you're just starting your grieving process. You've probably been numb up until the funeral. And now you're just beginning your grieving process and life goes on.
Gosh, there's so much here. We at least do some level of preparation, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word. We do a little bit of like, planning for the concept of death. Everyone dies. And so we do this, we at least, and religion, I honestly, it's one of my biggest frustrations with the concept of religion is the way death is handled. But at least it's trying to handle death. At least religion's like, well, we got to deal with this. We got to figure out some kind of explanation for it. There's just no preparing yourself for such a jarring change like what you're going through. There's no story about happily ever after. There's no, coming to terms and being at peace with the inevitable, the concept that everybody goes through some kind of thing. It's like taking all of the concepts, and forgive me, Mike, I'm not casting any sort of like shade or blame either way, but there's literally like nothing to prepare us for what we go through when it's like, okay, well, me and this person had all these plans and had all of this life build up and had all of this memories together. And then they didn't break that by ceasing to live. It's broken because things have changed. There's a change to our relationship. It's the feeling of rejection. It's the feeling of failure. It's the failure of feeling of change. It's the feeling of death, all wrapped into one. Death is so final that its very nature is at least something to come to terms with. Separation, like the a change in a relationship dynamic, it's inconceivable. It's hard to even understand or make sense of. So I'm with you where I'm not trying to like, yeah, there's a ranking and death is worse. Certainly death is worse because death is so final. But as far as like the complexity of emotions, I don't know what's worse. The complexity of what you have to go through and what you have to deal with, there's a lot. Mike, I have a question for you. I don't have a question for you just yet. I have a question that I'll ask maybe a little bit later. Okay. I'm not ready to ask that question.
Well, I'm glad you – so now that we can put literal death aside in a way and just be like, it's awful, let me talk about how separation
– setting aside literal –
put it on the side is some of the nuances that make it painful, really painful. One is it's really difficult to accept. It's like, I think there's a part of me that even though it's been mutual in the way that we're like, we got married when we were babies. Got married when I was 22, she was 20, we were babies. And a lot's changed since then. We were Mormon babies and we had kids as Mormon babies. And things change. People change. And we need to figure out what that change is, right? And but there's always a part of me, because she's alive and I'm alive, there's a part of me that's like, well, maybe there's a future where, you know, we're venturing different paths in the midst of darkness, but maybe there's a future where we sync back up. You know, it's hard to kill that hope completely. And I know it's hard to accept death, but like, it's hard to accept, and it's hard to like fully let it die sometimes, because it's like, oh, people get back together all the time. And maybe there's, I don't know, that makes it hard.
Can I interrupt that real quick?
Yeah, please. Mm-hmm.
So like you're saying it, there's that phenomenon when there's, you know, someone goes through a painful death. That's like, oh, I see them. I saw them in the grocery store. And it's like, no, you're just, that's your imagination playing tricks on you. That's your hope for wanting to see them. Because you miss them with, again, to clarify, we are not comparing and saying separation is harder than death. We're not saying that. Death is final. Death is harder. However, you go through a separation, you do still fucking see them. You see them at the kids' sports events. You see them at the grocery store. You see them in your, you know, you have to interact with them, and you see them with someone else that they now maybe love instead of you. Like, yeah, it's way more complex and hard to deal with that kind of stuff than it is to just be like, man, I am a lonely widower. Sorry. Whatever. There are some parts of that that are significantly more difficult. I'm saying it. I guess I've said the whole time that I'm not going to make comparisons, but I just did.
You know, I think maybe we just fuck the comparisons and just do it. And if we get blamed for it, whatever. But like,
let's just say what we feel. And then if people have a problem with it, we'll be like, well, hey, we were just expressing our feelings.
Perfect. And that's why, because I feel like I'm tiptoeing around feelings because I'm worried about what someone might say and someone might like, you know, like, but,
everyone is entitled to the way that they are feeling and experiencing life, including Mike.
But what you're talking about, because you do see them, you see them all the time, and you see them going out on dates on Friday nights, and you see them like, and it's like, shit, like, it's hard. It's fucking hard. And it's hard to unpack those. Man. I mean, 20 years of human bonding is hard to unpack. And especially when that person has been your source of your needs, sex, intimacy, connection. You know, there's a codependency that, like, you know, for a while there, I'm like, I don't know if I can live without her. And, you know, it's lessened, but it's hard. And then it plays into the whole Mormon fear of like, look, I've left the church now. And of course now this has happened in my life, right? Like, you leave the church and you want to be this model of like, oh no, look, you can leave the church and you can stay together and you can be happy and you can do this and that. And it's a little bit of, I don't know. It was really hard this year looking at all the Christmas cards on the wall. And that just was hard, I guess, is all I need to say about that. You know, you're seeing all the Christmas cards on the wall and everyone with their, you know, monogamous, happy families and being like, oh shit, like, where did we go wrong? And you question it. And you question leaving the church even. Like, had we stayed in the church, you know, or what? And, you know, dealing, you know, when I told my family about it, most of them who are still Mormon, they were great. They were lovely and they were supportive. They've been so supportive, reached out a lot. And my fear is that like, they're looking at it as like, well, yeah, they left the church. So this is what happens when you leave the church, when you let go of the iron rod and go into the mists of darkness. And, yeah, it's been hard.
Yeah, man. We got to address that. That's a very real and common feeling. Is it okay if I just speak freely?
please. I think it's time we speak freely. I think we tiptoed around shit, and I'm sick of it.
That, okay, well, so what I'm trying to say is that those feelings from members of the church who could I think it's reasonable to assume, I'm not assuming because I've heard people say that out loud, not about you specifically, but I've heard people say that kind of thing about me. That that's just reflective of hypocritical bullshit. Because if someone really does feel that way, they're only justified in feeling that way if the religion that they come from has a 0% instances of abuse, divorce, unfaithfulness, disloyalty, all that kind of stuff. Otherwise, it's pure hypocrisy. The Mormon church, any other church, does not have some sort of monopoly on love and relationships. Divorce rates do factor in the religion of the people getting divorced. And the divorce rates are the same all across the country. And so this is a thing that I feel very strongly about. I'm withholding a little bit of my maybe fire for this, but that judgment of, well, that's what happens when you leave the church. That's one of the worst judgments that a person can have, especially if that person believes in the teachings of a great teacher or a savior, Jesus, Muhammad, the Bodhisattva. That's a feeling and a sensation and a thought process that I have a very personal and deep problem with because of some of my own, you know, life experience and stuff like that. Because God, I'm going to go on a tangent here, Mike. That's not as serious as the stuff that we're talking about. But I am going to go on a little bit of a tangent here. There's a real weird thing going on right now. You know, some people call it like Christo-fascism. There are some people that just call it theocracy. Like this rise of Christian nationalism, specifically in America, right? This idea that we've had, you know, the Speaker of the House as an example. We've had. Prominent political figures talk about the need for a national religion or for a shared faith in our country and stuff like that. And, you know, there's always, you know, there's a story about a guy who saw a statue of, you know, from the Church of Satan, you know, the what's the dude's name? Baphomet? I can't remember the name. But anyway, you know, the like goat head looking Satan dude, like there's a statue of him. And there's some dude who's like, you know, decapitated the statue. And he's kind of being celebrated as a Christian hero because he's like, it offended me and I was who. And there's people that are like trying to get prayer in school. And there's people that are trying to get the Ten Commandments on the courthouse lawn or just whatever it is. It's amazing to me how when it comes to making your political agenda ring true, it's amazing to me how Christians go so quickly to the violent and insecure God of the Old Testament and give no heed to the New Testament Christ that they claim to believe in, that they claim all this passion for, that they claim all this fealty to, this Jesus figure. Because that Jesus figure is the one that's saying, hey, if you got a homie who is cold, give him the coat off your back. If you got someone who slaps you in the face, let them slap you 7 times 70 more times in the face. If there's someone who asks you to walk with them 1 mile, double up, walk with them too. If there's someone who offends you and wants to sue you, give in. Love them. Love them like you love yourself. Love them like you love your neighbor. Love your enemies. This Jesus doesn't exist in Christian nationalism right now. The Jesus that people claim to believe in is the dude who's destroying Jericho. The dude who's murdering all human life with a flood. The dude who's going hard and saying, it's my way or the highway. They give no heed to the Jesus who is like, you know what? I think this is trouble. I think all this hate and judgment and self-righteousness and thinking that we're better than everybody else, I think that this shit is going to leave us all feeling helpless and alone and lonely. I think that we ought to look past our differences. I think that we ought to learn to somehow love each other more than we know how to love each other. I think that there's probably a way for us to dismiss the concept of violence. And every time I bring up that part, people are like, well, what about the time that he cleared the temple? Motherfucker, there are four gospels that talk about the life of Jesus Christ. And the only time that he even gets a little upset and does not show love and temperance and patience, that's the one that you want to go to make that your Jesus. Well, you got the wrong Jesus, dog.
Doing? The other four gospels. Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your point there. I'm just saying what, and the moneylenders, what they were I'm just tying it back to capitalism somehow, and I'm losing my words. It's like they were selling shit. They were profiting. That's the one he got mad at.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they were profiting. They money changers in the temple means they were literally profiting off of other people's spirituality. And okay, dog, I can get down for getting mad about that. Let's do it. In fact, you know what? Let's get mad about profiting from the deeply held religious beliefs of others. Let's start with tithing. Let's start with $120 billion hedge fund. Let's start with one of the largest land and property owners in the world. Okay, we're going to talk about Jesus, turning over the tables and turning over the money changers in the temple. Okay, fine. That's the Jesus we want to talk about. Then let's talk about making money by exploiting people's deeply held religious beliefs. Okay, that's the Jesus we're talking about. The rest of the time, Jesus is like, hey, guys, I think that these people who disagree with us, I think that these people who want to collect taxes from us, I think that these harlots, I think that these sinners, I think that these publicans, I think all of these people deserve love. I think that there's a path to love. Let's disregard that. Let's just be the type of Christians that care about the time Jesus threw a little bit of a temper tantrum in the temple. Okay, guess what that was about? That was about people making money by exploiting other people's beliefs. So now what? So now what are we going to do? You have to shut down. We're going to shut down the churches who charge money.
This is getting me fired up. I had a discussion with someone close to me recently who's still kind of waffling about the church and feels so much guilt for not paying tithing. And, you know, has the stories, you know, everyone hears the stories of like, you know, someone paid tithing at the right moment and they were blessed with a check or something came in the mail. And I asked the question, and I feel it's a good question to ask, like, well, what if their faith really did help them out? But why is the church taking credit for that? Why is the church coming in between them and the divine, the self, the God, the church that's amassing how many billions of dollars and how much land, the biggest landowner in Florida, that's building temples in like villages across the world that have like 100 members, is now building these opulent temples just because they have to spend it on something, temples that no one's going to use. And it's firing me up because, like, you know, that there's a line in a Midnight song, and it's they didn't come up with this phrase, but it's coming to me right now. It's in the dark, there are no strangers.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm feeling that right now. Like when you go and are willing to go in the midst of darkness with people and go into their dark places, mourn with those who mourn, comfort those who need comforting. There are no strangers. You're not pointing fingers. There's no judgment. And how often, for those of us who have let go of the iron rod of Mormonism and walked into the midst of darkness, who's the one pointing the fingers? You know, the ones mocking.
Right.
And so look, letting go of the iron rod is the scariest decision I've ever made in my life. Next to separating from my wife. The scariest, most heart-wrenching decision I have ever made in my life. And I don't know how dark these myths are. Fucking dark when you walk into them. And so I don't want any motherfucker holding, still gripping on that rod to judge me for walking my own unique path, walking my authentic path, for taking those steps blindly, calling out for some guide to kind of help in certain places. But like, you don't know the fear that it takes to be like, look, this path is not mine anymore. And I'm going off in search of my own, come what may. I don't give a fuck. I just know that this path isn't mine. And I know we've broken our promises to mom, and I've said the F word several times, but like, fuck it. Fuck it.
I didn't mean to take us on a tangent. Dude, this is like tithing is probably my hot button issue. I mean, I know I've got a lot of hot button issues. I mean, the way the LGBTQ community is treated by the church, I got a big problem with. I got a problem with the doctrines. Like I have a problem with pragmatism. I've got a problem with the Jesus thing. I got a problem with the plan of salvation. But my biggest one is probably the tithing thing because of the way it's explained away. You know, Jesus is going around talking about like, don't, you know what? Stop laying up treasures on earth, gold and silver, like moth and thieves. Like there's corruption, like it loses its value and you can't take it with you. And therefore, you know, lay up treasures in heaven. You know, that's Jesus's whole vibe. He's like, dude, nah, don't worry about this. Like let's work on getting the real reward. Let's work on getting the real treasures. You know, like consider the lilies of the field. He's like, yeah, you guys don't need anything. Don't take anything with you. Consider the lilies of the field. Meanwhile, the Mormon church, which is the only one I have I want to speak out against all religions, but the only one I have the pleasure of being raised in is the LDS church. And so I have a real hard time with that being a core scripture. Like there are very few quotes from Jesus Christ himself. Now I don't know how accurate we're quoting this dude, you know, like let's keep that in mind, but it is canon. It's considered doctrine. It's considered the words of Jesus. And he's talking about there is no value in putting value in material possessions and wealth. The Mormon church needs to explain $120 million hedge fund, billion. If that's the case. Because million, why is it okay for the member? What's that?
You said million.
Oh, billion with a B. Yeah. I didn't mean to say million. $120 billion. So I probably did say million. $120 billion hedge fund. Why is it okay for the church to tell their members, hey, you're not getting value in material wealth and possessions. Give them up. While you're giving them up, give some of it to the church. Why? I don't understand how that basic hypocrisy is not like taking more of my loved ones out of the Mormon church. We've never talked this openly. I do not understand how that very easy and one-to-one comparison hypocrisy is not making more of my homies be like, oh yeah, what's up with this? Why does the church have such a huge machine? Why does the church have such a huge engine?
Oh, well, because the church does so much good. And you know, the church is one of the greatest charitable organizations on the face of the earth.
Bro, the church has $120 billion. They're not the greatest charitable organization on the earth. They got $120 billion. Not to mention the hundreds of billions of dollars that their land is worth right now. Not to mention the concept of land ownership. Is how could that possibly be even? I can't even make heads or tails of how that could possibly be something that someone believes that God created the earth and then was like, okay, who wants the most of this earth? who wants to get the most of it?
Go out and claim it. Go out and stake your land, stake your claim.
I'll claim it. I made it. Go get some. Go check the ones near the shore.
Yeah, sorry, we got to go back. I'm sorry, Mike. I've taken us in a totally wrong direction.
No, this is the direction that's perfect, because you said something about like considering the lilies of the field, right? How they grow. And
yeah,
I forget all the Jesus's words now, but the sparrows and the whatever, like I've actually been,
he knows them all. He knows.
I've actually been feeling that lately. Those scripture those teachings, because what I'm realizing, and we're breaking up, aren't we? Is it like,
yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's recording.
We've been delayed.
I know. It's made the back and forth hard, and I hate the, like, whatever, but let me get through my point here, 'cause I know it's recording on my end, but like, is, you know, a lot of the, feedback I've gotten people I've reached out to with my separation, especially members of the church, have been really kind and supportive. And then also I feel their fear projected on, and they ask a lot of questions like, are you getting divorced? What's going on from now? Where are you splitting up? Are you splitting the house and this and all these future questions? Like, what they want to know, certainty. And that grasping of an iron rod is a grasping of certainty, a false sense of security. And we can get into marriage and monogamy. I'm a little jaded later in another episodes, because right now I feel like in my current state, marriage and monogamy, it's writing checks that it can't cash. But it feels good to have that check in your pocket. That check feels so warm and cozy in your pocket. But go try to cash it. Just try it. And those checks of certainty. And so the Mormon church is stockpiling billions of dollars in that quest for certainty. When the figure who they claim to have the name of, the Church of Jesus Christ, is all about releasing that certainty. Consider the lilies of the field. Be in the present moment. Be right here, right now. Don't stockpile for the future. Like, think of right now. What's in front of you? And I even told someone who was, I kind of shot back at someone who was, you know, trying to quote unquote comfort me, but like also planting all these fears in me, like, where's your marriage going? What's happening this? I was like, look, I cannot hold your fear right now. I'm going through enough on my own. I can only look at what's in front of me. I can only be right here and trust. There's a trust in the abundance. So there's this image that came to mind of the fucking game of musical chairs, right? Like, we play this game, we have these chairs in the middle, and whether you're talking about love or money or anything that we fight over on this planet, it's because someone's pulled away one of the chairs. And we're all fighting because we don't want to be the eighth man out and the seven are sitting on chairs, and now we don't have a lover, we don't have money, we don't have a home, because everyone's fighting over it because there's not enough for everybody. What I think Christ is saying in that scripture is, what if you trust that there is, and you can just be in the present instead of worrying about the future? Just take a deep breath, be with your grief, be with your pain, be with even, you know, I've had so many great, lovely moments with my wife since our separation. We get along great. We, you know, we've had nights out where we go to dinner and we talk, and we've had hard, like the hardest nights, but so many lovely nights, where it's just like, we're in more of a friendly space. And when we're not worrying about the future, when we're not bitter and hurt, and like, when we can just be in the moment, we're great. It's great. You know, it's when we start thinking and projecting about futures that probably will never come to pass, whatever future I'm trying to envision and scenario I'm trying to imagine in my head that's projected from fear is likely not going to happen. It's going to happen in a different way from the million ways that I'm trying to spin out on. So why even go there? Why not take a deep breath? There's a, you know how I said in a recent episode how I've kind of gotten touched back with prayer? I was reading in this book, the somatics book for school, and they recommended a form of prayer, which I've been practicing a lot, which is called non-directed prayer, which is basically you're not specifically asking for anything. You're just putting it's a way of releasing emotions, basically what it is. It's like when you find your mind's going somewhere else other than the present, just it, maybe it's, let's do an example. Let's say it's worrying about if I'm going to like lose my home, right? Let's just so that like you're worried about spending money, losing your home. You kind of just put out the wish as a feeling. Not, you're not wishing for anything specifically. You're putting out the wish as a feeling, but what that does is it grounds you in the present. It's like praying as a way to be present with now. And I know prayer can be a trigger word, but like releasing emotions to be grounded in the present. And that's what I've been, that's what's been carrying me lately is like, look, if I just like put out these wishes, like energetically, emotionally, just so I can be present and enjoy the moments when I have them while I have them. And damn, I can trust that, like, then I can trust in rebirth. Then I can trust that there's something on the other side of this. And then I can trust that, like, maybe it's not even something on the other side of it. There's beauty in the grief. There's beauty. Like, you talk about, like, the beauty in remembering someone you loved, remembering my cousin who died. Remembering the good times, remembering what that felt like, savoring those moments, savoring the moments I've had with my wife over 20 years and the beauty that we created with our kids and our family and like all the things we've loved and just like being present to all of the complicated emotions of grief, the good and the bad and the hurt and the pain and like, and not trying to be somewhere else than right now. And I think we can all learn something from Jesus with all that, man. And so I think we can be more like Jesus and just be fucking here now, right? Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, Mike, I couldn't agree more. It makes me think about, one of the things that, geez, my brain wants to go four different ways right now. Do you ever have that feeling?
Yeah, all the time. As I'm trying to make a point, my brain is already going somewhere else.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm feeling right now. Like, I just want to give you some love. I want to talk about love. That's what I want to do for a second. Because we've been talking about your relationship with your cousin who passed a year ago yesterday. That's a certain type of love. We've been talking about, I've kind of vaguely been talking about a loss that I've been going through that has old love. Like, we're talking, this is like love, like deep love, right? Mm-hmm. And then we're also talking about the romance, like the love stuff. And then also a fourth one, we're talking about Jesus Christ. We're talking about love in all its forms here. And it remains for me the most difficult and hard to understand concept of everything that's out there. Like, every time I trip, I get into that zone where it's just like, God, it really is just all about love, huh? Like, I get there. I think that most people, from my experience, most people that go through like some sort of trip on some sort of psychedelic do get to that point of like, wow, the answer is love. Love is all you need. The Beatles said it, you know, love is all you need and all that kind of stuff. The problem is, what is love? You and I talked about this, right?
Yeah.
What is love other than giving someone else permission and the ability to completely wreck you, like completely harm you, like hurt you? Like, what is love other than the ability to deeply harm someone else? I don't, maybe that's a cynical thing for me to be saying. I'm asking that question. I'm not saying it as a rhetorical kind of thing. I'm asking the world that might be listening. And I'm also asking just you directly, Mike, what, when we're talking about a relationship with a significant other or a familial relationship or you know, God-like love, you know, Jesus loving everybody. Like, when we're talking about this broad and mysterious concept of love, what is it? Because all it ends up doing is creating pain, but also that pain is the whole thing. And it's God, I'm confused as ever. I'm as confused now as I was when they ripped me screaming and naked from my mother's vagina. I am just as confused now as I was then. Like, what is all this? What's going on?
You said that so much more eloquently than I did, but like, man, you're unlocking something in me with that, because I don't think love is some hippy dippy bullshit, right? Of like, it's all love, man. You know,
hey, man, I feel all you need is love, bro.
I feel like, sure, it all comes back to love, but what is love? And if you go through the grieving process, you know, love is also anger and betrayal and jealousy and hurt and mixed in with all of it. And so maybe that love is that I'm willing to feel all of it because I want to connect with you, whether that's a friend, a lover, a parent, I'm willing to go through all these, I'm willing to cycle through all these emotions. And especially when I lose you, I will cycle through all these emotions and I will be angry at you and bitter. I'm talking both like all around, you know, I think about, you know, my cousin who took his life. I've been angry at him. Like, how could you do that? And then I've also been so angry at me. Like, how could I not reach out? I've been like, and then you just go through all of it. And I guess at the core of all of that, like, I would not be angry at him. I would not be angry at myself. I would not be bitter. I would not be heartbroken if I didn't love. And love is at the heart of all those emotions. But that's a different type of love, it feels like. You know, it's like,
what is love, man? I mean, different types of love. There's infinity types of love, you know?
You know, we talked about that Lady Death myth before. And when Clarissa Pinkola Estes is writing about it in her book, Women Who Run With the Wolves, she writes about it as in death. She talked about there's seven gates to death and in a relationship. But each time you go through a death, it's a deepening into love. It might look different. The love might look different on the other side, but you go through a death process. Like, I have a deeper love for my cousin than I did a year ago. And I wish I didn't. I wish I'd felt this deeply or communicate or realized maybe that I felt this deeply about him a year ago. I felt the same way about my wife. Like, a lot of what I felt is regret that at 22 years old, because I was depressed and because I was worried about making it to the temple and being worthy and being a good priesthood holder. And now we're wearing fucking garments and now we're trying to fuck wearing fucking garments, that I wasn't able to express how deeply, passionately I've been in love with her and feeling that depth, right? And feeling like, I don't know. I think grief helps you get in touch with that depth of love that we all take for granted because we're not living in the fucking present, and because we're human and we're going to take things for granted. And, you know, like, we do.
Yeah. But I mean, we're stubborn. We're self-conscious. We're full of shit. I mean, there's all sorts of things that are part of the human condition. This is, God, Mike, this is really making me think about my whole thing. I'm not ready to talk about my whole thing, but this is really making me think about my thing because love is active. You know, when I'm tripping and I'm sitting there being like, hey, will anybody listen to me talk for a second here? Like, and I'm pontificating on like, man, it's all about love. Like, all you need is love. I feel like I'm doing that when it's easy. Like, when you're in that state of altered consciousness, it's really easy to like say, yeah, It's so simple. Life, love is easy. Let's just love. All we need is love. Everything's love. But it's putting that into practice. It's the action of love that becomes this hard thing because it gets all convoluted and tied up and weird. You know, if you're talking about your cousin or if you're talking about your significant other, there's those things that are unsaid that we know we can say. Like we know what we can say, but we dig our heels in, we don't say it, or we put it off because it's like, I'm not going to reach out to that person. They owe me something first. Shit, man, that made me cry a little. I got to like get my shit together. All I'm trying to say is that just like every other belief system or lifestyle choice or modality that requires us to set aside the messiness of being real, like being real humans. The esoteric woo-woo hippie world can do that very thing as well. It can lead you down a false path and require supernatural and unrealistic expectations of you. Like the statement, love is all you need, is a great statement to make when you're in a very present moment, when you're in a real solid session. It's putting it into practice. That's the act of humanity, man. Like that's you know, like,
yeah.
Sorry about my, what I'm trying to say here, Mike, is that, sometimes the easy answers and the cliche stuff and the judgment that comes through from others, sometimes that stuff is probably hiding and masking some pretty deep pain and some really tough, you know, truths, like self realization things that are hard to come to terms with. And I know I might be, I'm really sorry about this last little bit of words, because I know I'm probably being a little discombobulated. I'm talking about the topic that I started talking about, but at the same time, I'm also selfishly kind of thinking about some stuff that I'm going through and also, making comparisons to what you're going through. Based on the things that I kind of maybe know or have some inside information on, like, it's just fucking hard. And maybe we all need a little bit of a break, you know, maybe it's okay to give ourselves a break, but maybe it's all okay to give everybody else a little bit of a break too. You know, they're going through a lot of, people are going through a lot of weird shit. God, you need to talk. I'm like, yeah, having a hard time.
I know. Holding myself together right now. But one thing and maybe we can almost close out here with a few more points. It's like, but because we've talked about loving others in this, but what I'm learning to now in this separation and feeling back to me and kind of taking back all this stuff that I've outsourced, like for 20 years, you know, someone was I outsourced my needs onto one person. Right. And I, expected to get my needs met through them. And I, it's taking back my own power and loving myself. I mean, you talk about a part of love too. The only way you can love a wolf is if you have a good gate in between you and the wolf, good protection, a good boundary. You know, you're not going to go love on a wolf. And also love for, I think there's a self-love in all of this where it's like getting back in touch with me and what do I love? Filling my own bucket. Because when I do that, then I have more love to give all around. And I'm not cutting parts of myself off. I'm not cutting parts of myself off to please a church that wanted me to fit into a box. I'm not cutting parts of myself off for fear of losing someone who I might lose anyway. I'll, at the end of the day, and maybe this sounds cynical, but I'm meaning it from like a very like empowering way of all there is me. And that might sound selfish, but I know me. I know I'm going to love. And I know if I'm taking care of me, I'm going to love even more. And so there's a reclaiming of that through all of this and through the grief that, I don't know. I guess it's empowering, and it's tying back. When you were talking about love and the depth of love, I feel like I'm finding a deeper love for myself in all of this. And what do I deserve? What do I, what kind of life do I want to live? What kind of love do I want to receive? And what kind of love do I want to put out in the world? And I feel like that's deepened over this last year too. So I'm mega coming into 2024 being like, I want to love bigger and I want to receive love bigger all around. So bring it. Bring it, man. Bring 2024.
Bring it on. Now give it. Now, hey, Mike.
Yeah.
Let's actually come up with an identity. Like, what's the name of the identity that you're going to read this one as?
His name is Cool Joe.
Cool Joe, baby. Here it comes. Ladies and gentlemen.
The first name that came to me when you said that was Patrick, but I want to read it as Patrick.
Dude, I'll do it as Patrick. You do it as Cool Joe.
Okay.
You ready?
Maybe you start it and I'll do the next one.
All right, here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. As a reminder, the very best way to support this podcast is to just head on over to patreon.com/Mormons on Mushrooms.
There you're going to find bonus content, fun episodes, other shit.
Girl, we're talking about shit you have not heard before.
Never. Mankind has never heard these things before. So go on over to Patreon. But we'd also love it if you gave us a review. Just head over to Apple and give us a quick love over there. Quick love. Quickie.
Just a little bit of love on Apple. Listen, if you're listening on Spotify, that's cool too. Put up a 5-star if you liked it. If you didn't, keep your mouth shut.
Just maybe put up a whoa, yo, Flavor Country.
We love Flavor Country. By the way, Mike and I also accept just free pure money, and you can do that at Venmo. Mike, hit him with the deets.
Just put them in our pocket. Just give us some money at Mushmore, M-U-S-H-M-O-R, on Venmo, and we'll use it to buy some kombuchas. Just have a good time.
M-U-S-H-M-O-R. What up? Peace.
Fucking yes.